Georgia Virtue presents the Let Me Tell You Why You're Wrong podcast.
Thank you for downloading episode 314. This week we have Burying the Juice, No Relief from Inflation, Hush Money, Let Your Freak Flag Fly as Long as It's Not the Stars and Stripes, Some Dumb Stuff from Texas, Don't Speak in Rio, Kemp Steps Up Against a Thief, Taking Aim at Burt Jones, and The Cash Pit Called NPR. I'm Dave Roberts. With me is Representative Emeritus, my partner's endeavor, Ken Pullen.
Yeah, and it's Masters Week, which is one of the best golfing weeks of the year for us golfers. And even I think my wife likes to watch golf also, or the Masters Week.
Just for the azaleas?
Just for the azaleas.
Well, by the time this drops, it'll be tax day.
Yes, I went ahead and filed mine. But yeah, it's tax day when it drops. That's cool. In a very sad way.
Tax day should be the first Monday in November.
I don't know when it should be. Never.
Well, never. But yeah, the first Monday in November is right before the Tuesday following the first Monday in November, which is Election Day.
Yeah, but most people don't pay taxes anymore anyway. So,
We'll get to that.
50% of the public doesn't pay.
Yeah, do away with withholding. Make everybody write a check.
Yeah, I do agree with that. You should have to. Yep. If we're going to be taxed, you should have to write the check.
Yeah, you should feel the pain, then you might want to take aim at some of those social programs.
Yeah, it would definitely change everybody's mindset on taxes.
Yeah, a billion here, trillion there. That those numbers are so astronomical that people forget that it's actual money. So if you actually had to write a check right before Election Day, things would actually change.
Yeah, it would. Hey, and I know we didn't have this story in the outline, but there's a state house race going on right now down in Columbus to replace Chairman Richard Smith, passed away late last year, or actually earlier this year during session. And they're having a special election to replace Richard Smith, and there were four people that ran for it. And I saw this reported on a Peach Pundit earlier from one of my old friends, or from one of my friends, Scott Turner, who used to be a representative. But in the special election, and it's so intriguing, it was actually on April 9th was the special election. No candidate received 50 plus one, so there's a runoff. And I think both of us are not a big fan of runoffs. But two of the people, and this is Carmen Rice and Sean Knox, and I know both of these people, they're in a special election runoff, which is scheduled May 7th. So if you follow me for just a minute, the primary election for this seat is actually May 21st, but they're in a special election, which will be won or lost on May 7th. So if, for instance, Sean Knox could win on May 7th, and then the voters are going to vote 2 weeks later on that seat again, and Carmen Rice could win on May 21st. And that happened, Sean would serve to the end of the year, never actually go into the House chambers for a day because they don't come back into session until the first or second Monday in January. And then Carmen Rice would start serving. So this is a very, it's just for us political people, but having a special election 2 weeks before the primary election, like how confused are voters going to be down in that district?
Yeah, and like we said, it's going to be during early voting. So early voting is going to be, I don't know, at the courthouse, whatever. But for the special election, you're going to have to go to your precinct. And they're two totally different ballots.
Yeah, two totally different ballots. And look, you could vote, let's just say early voting starts on April 29th. If you go vote early on April 29th for the primary, you may just forget that you need to go back and vote on the special election a week later.
10 days later.
Yeah, 10 days later. So it's, we'll have to follow this and give an update. But, I know they're hoping probably the same person wins both, but they were only separated by 12 votes in the first election. So this is truly, who gets their people out for the
ground
May
game?
21st? This is all ground game, and it's all ground game for May 21st because you really don't necessarily care about the May 7th. It's ground game in the primary. That's what they're really concentrating on.
Yeah.
So that's just wild to me that the dates align like they did. I'm a big fan of ranked choice voting. Ranked choice voting this problem wouldn't exist. And, but anyway, you know, that's not anything that's going to get passed anytime soon in Georgia.
And it still wouldn't have mattered other than this would be out of the way.
Yeah, it would already be out of the way. It would be out of the way. But you're right. There'd still be all these people would still be running in a primary. Yep. Totally.
Yes, and that could end up in a runoff very easily.
Yeah, we're going to have to watch what happens in that. It's very intriguing.
So we got the news Thursday that the juice is dead. O.J. Simpson has died of cancer at the age of 76, I think.
Yeah, I didn't know he was sick. So he had prostate cancer about a year ago. He was discovered, and that's what he ended up passing away from was cancer.
Oh, he was lying on social media. He said, I'm not sick. I'm at a Super Bowl party, and all this stuff. And he, in fact, he was heading for hospice.
You know, I'd forgotten. I had to look back at the dates because I remember when he was acquitted and went through that trial. I was in college, so this would have been the mid-90s, I guess, early 90s,
mid-90s.
95. Yep. Yes, I was a sophomore in college. And I remember us all sitting around the dorm room watching what transpired in this trial because everybody was fixated on it, right? I mean, if the glove don't fit, acquit. I mean, who doesn't have that image in their mind of him putting the glove on?
It's such a sham, too, because the glove was soaked in blood. So the leather had no stretch left in it. Yep. And his defense team told him to stop taking his arthritis medication so his knuckles would swell.
Oh, goodness. That's so smart for them.
There's a lot of things they did that was that was really underhanded. Now, this, you know, historical perspective here, this is on the you know, tail end of the riots in LA after the Rodney King incident. You know, they, of course, that was misreported. They kept calling Rodney King a motorist. No, he was in a high speed chase. And I'm saying they should have beat the snot out of him. No, but Chris Rock once said, talk about how not to get your ass beat by the police. And what is don't run. If a cop has to chase you, an ass beating's coming with him.
Yeah. I was amazed at all the reactions to OJ passing away last Thursday. Everybody seemed to have their own opinion of OJ.
And look, OJ was one of the most loved people in the United States. Everybody loved OJ, not just football fans. Hertz commercials, the Naked Gun playing Nordberg.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Huh?
I remember watching the chase. I was in the field house at high school. And we're like, Nordberg is running for the police. he was beloved, but once the cameras were, and look, I heard nothing but good things about the way he was in public. He shook everybody's hand, signed every autograph. He was charming and personable. But once the door closed and lights were off, he was a horrible human being, and he abused Nicole Brown Simpson. He absolutely did. He was an abusive husband. There are 911 tapes. And, you know, I put something on Facebook, and this is a pattern that we see with abusers, that is that outside looking in, you can't believe it. They're some of the most charming people in the world. I mean, how do you think they keep these victims? Is because when things are good, they're super charming. When things are bad, they're really bad.
Yeah.
And like so often happens with domestic abuse, the victim dies.
Yep, and that's what Gloria Allred said, who I don't think we're fans of Gloria, but she was Nicole Brown Simpson's, you know, she was with the family during this trial, but she said the same thing you just did, basically, you said exactly right, so.
Yeah, and look, I every once in a while, you're going to agree with people. Every once in a while, I agreed with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, too.
Yeah, I mean, the clock's right twice a day, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was going to say, Caitlin tweeted good riddance, but there were rumors that OJ slept with Miss Jenner back in the day. I didn't realize there was still money out there on the table. So, the Goldman's attorney, David Cook, told TMZ that, you know, while he may be gone, his multi-million-dollar judgment is not. And the Goldman's are interested in discerning what money assets he may have left behind that they can collect. So his legal problems are still not over.
Well, there are things that OJ gave us. One are the Kardashians, because was it Robert Kardashian, Kim's father? actually got his law license reinstated in California so that he could talk to OJ and have privileged conversations. This trial really brought about the 24-hour news cycle.
It did. Yeah. It was all over the news. Who was the police officer during this trial that kind of botched up some of the stuff? Do you remember him?
Oh, I can't remember. I remember the Marsha Clark, Judge Ito, obviously Johnny Cochran.
Yep. All those.
The other dirty trick.
There was a Cato.
Cato Kalin. I saw him on TV last night.
Right. Yep.
The other thing that they did is OJ never really considered himself a black celebrity. I mean, obviously he knew he was black. But, you know, he never really flew the flag of saying, you know, he's a pioneer for black celebrities or anything like that. His house was decorated with pictures of him and his friends, other celebrities, black, white, anybody else. And before they brought the jury in, because they brought the jury in to look at the layout of where they found the evidence, where Cato Kalin's house actually was on the property, the guest house. So before they did that, they took all those pictures down and put it back up with a more African American theme. Again, this is right after Rodney King.
Mm-hmm.
So they played it up. The lead chair, even though Johnny Cochran was a brilliant attorney, absolutely brilliant. I thought he didn't have a soul for defending OJ like that, but I guess, you know, every defendant is entitled to a vigorous defense.
Oh yeah.
But there was Marsha Clark was just losing her mind over this because she knew what the hell they were doing. She couldn't tell the jury. It would have been a mistrial. And they couldn't tell the jury that he redecorated to make himself more sympathetic, especially after the riots and all that stuff. And look, the response from not all the entire black community, but the response, like Oprah had it live and stuff like that. The response of, yeah, so somebody like me, finally the justice system works for us. Like, he murdered two people. My opinion. I'll give the disclosure later, my opinion. But he's accused of murdering two people.
Yeah, right.
Innocent people.
Yeah, innocent.
And an abuser. And look, it's the mindset is, if I can't have you, nobody can.
Yep.
And I don't even know if she and Ron were dating or they were just friends. I had no idea. Cato is actually her friend, and she allowed him to move in when she was still living on the property. And Kalin said he rarely socialized with OJ. Every once in a while, he'd get an invite to a party or something like that. And he'd, you know, go across the compound and go hang out for a little while. But, you know, he and OJ weren't, you know, quote unquote friends, which is kind of appropriate. Cato was a young kind of surfer guy, and OJ was well into his 40s.
Yep.
If not 50s. Well, I guess it wouldn't be 50s. He died at 76. So inflation is still out of control.
Yeah, this is wild. I think everybody down on the ground realizes inflation is out of control. You know, this has been after months of Biden touting that inflation was coming down. But in March, U.S. consumer prices increased more than expected. You know, we've had the Fed has been monitoring this. They raised interest rates. Now with this third straight month of consumer price readings, while they were supposed to cut interest rates five times in 2024, there's talks now that they may actually raise interest rates again to try to get this under control. So the job market's hot, inflation's hot. And again, Biden tried to come out this week and say that inflation was going down. In his mind, yeah, inflation's not as high as it was 2 years ago, but inflation is still going up. I mean, prices are still climbing.
And it's climbing places where they don't even count inflation.
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't count food and with inflation, which is absurd to me, because that's the one thing you really can't get away from. The stories are coming out, and I'm sure some of these are hyperbole, but people skipping meals in order to afford life. Now that goes back to the 80s of old people eating dog food, which is not true. It never happened because dog food's actually more expensive than going and getting a can
yeah,
of.
I think it is.
Dog food's expensive.
Yeah,
it's expensive to have a pet. And that is another sad thing is people are getting rid of their pets. They're dropping the pets off at shelters. They can't afford it. You know, that's sad. Because vet bills are going up. You know, dog food's going up just like other food. But, you know, I think what we're going to see is we're going to see Whole Foods get hurt. Because people aren't going to go for the organic raw milk or whatever you get there. That's $15 a gallon when they can go to Kroger's and get it for $7.
Yeah, right.
So now no one's going to admit it. You know, especially the crowd that's a Whole Foods type crowd that, you know, that wants to be seen. It's the same stuff, just with a different label on it. But
no, this is very concerning. I mean, it's going to impact the president. I mean, all this is leading up to a presidential election in November. But, you know, Biden's been touting all this is going down, and it's clearly inflation is not going down.
Well, and we all feel it.
No, 100%.
Taxes are up. You know, the Trump tax cuts have expired, and today being tax day, I have to go write a substantial check. and yes, I wait till tax day to pay that.
So yeah, I filed mine last week, but I told them don't pull the money out until the 15th.
But you know, interest rates are up, inflation's up. Houses are, you know, new houses are moving, I guess, a little bit, but you're just not.
Yeah, but the challenge is nobody with people like me that have a 2.7% interest rate, I wouldn't mind moving and doing something differently. But so many people, I talked to a real estate agent this week, people just aren't moving with those low interest rates. And, you know, that's impacting the housing market. And then there's very little inventory as it is. It's just. And I don't think we're in a housing bubble at all. I think it's totally different 2007, but it's a
different foundation. 2007 was built on Dodd-Frank, which was the idea that homeownership is a human right. And they were taking junk loans and packaging them up as securities. And if an investor, you know, usually a bank or investment group, was going to buy mortgages, they had to take so many subprime mortgages to go with it.
Yeah.
And that's really what would cause the bubble. On top of that, the lenders knew the appraisers. So the dirty side of it was the appraiser would go to the lender, go, how much do you need out of this house?
Oh yeah, it was totally all that stuff going on back in those days.
Oh yeah, so this is a different foundation.
Yep. A lot different.
Now, do I see a little softening? Yes. Do I see the burst? Not unless we start seeing houses go back, and if people are still sitting on their 2%, I don't see these houses going back. We may
I
see
don't
some.
Either, but you know, I saw the stat this week, and almost included a story: is credit card delinquency rates are at like a 10-year high right now. So delinquency rates are high. People aren't paying off their credit cards. That's kind of the first sign that stuff is starting to change a little bit when people stop paying their credit cards.
Well, credit cards are first. You need to keep your car because you have to keep going to work, and you need to keep your house because you need a place to live.
Yeah, car and food, yep.
So what do we see going back? We may see a softening in the recreational market. RVs, boats, airplanes. So we may start seeing a softening in those prices because, again, you don't need your boat to go to work. I mean, unless you're in the Keys or something like that. You don't need your boat to go to work. So when it comes down to it, and you're sitting around the kitchen table deciding what gets paid, we have to feed the family. We have to keep a roof over our head. And we have to have a car to get to work.
Yep.
Trump's first criminal trial starts this week.
Yes, this is the first criminal trial up in New York. This is total BS, but this is the Manhattan District Attorney, Alvin Bragg. Was accusing his team of falsifying business records in order to conceal, you know, breaches of state and federal law. So he's charged with 34 felony counts of falsifying business records. Naturally, Trump denies all the charges. This is the underlying events around this was the payments made to, I hate to call her porn actress, but this was the porn actress Stormy Daniels and former Playboy model Kara McDougal. So this was back in 2016, right? Trump's tried to postpone the trial further. They've run out of road on that, and it starts on the day that this podcast drops next week. Crazy stuff. And I mean, the good thing to note here is the charges are usually misdemeanors, but he actually made this a felony because he added some other, like, falsifying business records in. So it's just this total garbage, right? This was, if it is true, he made payments to a porn star, a misdemeanor at most, but that district attorney up in New York has made it a felony to go after President Trump.
Is it Avenatti that was Stormy Daniels' attorney that's in prison?
Yeah, I think that was true. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, he came out. It's funny when you're on the other side of the bars and said there's no way Trump can get a fair trial in New York.
Yep, and this involves attorney Michael Cohen. So supposedly Trump paid Michael Cohen for legal services, and then Michael Cohen paid Stormy Daniels. So it was kind of like Michael Cohen sitting in the middle. Trump gave the money to Michael Cohen, and Michael Cohen gave it to Stormy Daniels.
You know,
I can't believe we're at the point where we got this being brought up, right? Alvin Bragg is probably the worst district attorney in the nation. You know, all the crime going on in New York City at the moment, and this is what he chooses to spend his time on. It's truly amazing.
It's not shocking.
It's not shocking, look, but it's amazing. Yeah.
All these folks ran on getting Trump.
Oh, yeah. That was their campaign slogans.
So, first of all, Stormy Daniels is an awful prostitute.
I don't know what a good one is.
Well, no. I mean, that's part of it, is you're paying for silence.
Yeah,
I remember at one point she was trying to prove that that it did happen, even though Trump denies it. And she was describing his little Donald. And she was describing it, and everybody, even people who don't like Trump, like, whoa, out of line. No, no, no. But you get two of these ladies, and you've got Hunter Biden, who's doing coke with multiple prostitutes.
Oh, yeah, right.
Arguing about the weight of the crack that he bought with a hooker. Yeah, I don't care if Trump slept with her or them. I don't care.
I don't care about any of this stuff. I really don't. And then I don't know if you saw this week, but the lady that found that, President Biden's diary down in Florida, I think it was in Florida. She was moving to the house, diary's there. She sold it to Project Veritas for $25,000. She's going to jail for, a month or so? So they literally... this just shows how the justice system is in the U.S. right now, where they continue to go after people for these type of nonviolent crimes. And it's just being weaponized. It's weaponized in this case. It was weaponized against the girl that sold the diary. People are going to get tired of this at a certain point. They're going to lose faith in a judicial system.
Going to?
I know. They're going to, right? Especially at the federal level. Like, I've got a lot of faith in my local court system, but once you get up higher than that, you lose faith when people are doing this kind of stuff.
We've got an activist DA in New York, one in Atlanta. We've got activist U.S. attorneys. They're picking and choosing what they're going after. And like you said, Alvin Bragg has real crime to go after. Fannie Willis has a jail full of people with a backlog of cases. We've got people dying in the Fulton County jail of bug bites and things like that when he was in jail pre-trial longer than he would have served if he were found guilty.
Yep.
And they should have done, 10-13 hold and gotten this dude some help. I mean, the dude definitely had a screw loose. But we've got a huge backlog of cases, and where she's decided to spend energy? Going after Trump.
I know.
And why did she wait till 2024 to go after him? Because she wanted it during an election year.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be hard for Trump
to get
off on this case. Yeah, it's going to be hard for Trump to get off on this New York case. I don't know how they can find jurors to keep an open mind on this, because every juror up there has been tainted at this point, and you're in New York, which is, so I don't know how he, it'll be interesting to see how he comes out of this case. And then if he is found guilty of this felony, what happens at that point? I mean, are they going to try to throw someone running for, they're going to throw a former president, somebody running for office again in jail? Look, this is a trial that everybody says is the one that he could lose. He could be charged with a felony and serve jail time.
I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, but you know they will. I mean, what's to stop this guy?
I don't know the technical aspect of how you imprison a former president who is due Secret Service protection. You know, throw a former president into Sing Sing and tell him, good luck. I suggest you learn how to make a shank.
Yep. Who knows? We'll see that.
So is Seattle still the United States?
No, this is a crazy story. Yes, this kind of, I mean, I think everybody knows how liberal the town of Seattle is, or the city of Seattle. But these women, there was a women's country line dance. They were going to perform at a Seattle dance convention last week, and they were wearing American flag themed shirts. Supposedly, some of the attendees felt triggered and unsafe because this country line dancing team had on shirts with American flags on them, and they wanted them to take them off. And the line dancers said, screw that, we're not doing it. You know, this, we don't take political stances. We just came to dance. This was part of our outfit. And if you want to take us off, we're leaving. And they did. So good for them.
Well, a lot of them drove to the competition their costume.
Yep.
Now, if they want to get into topless line dancing, well, I'll be in the front row. But they were offering to give them like t-shirts or something to compete in. They're like, no.
I just didn't know the flag was a political statement any longer. I thought it was patriotism. I didn't think it said, hey, if you display a flag outside your house, for example, does that mean you're a Republican? And if you don't display a flag, you're... I've never looked at a flag or people that is political in nature. I just thought it was our flag.
I don't understand the triggered and unsafe. How do you feel unsafe about a bunch of girls who dance and who line dance?
Yeah, I'm also tired about people. Yeah, I'm tired with that statement that if something I don't like, if I see something I don't like or hear something I don't like, I suddenly feel unsafe and triggered. Like people got some growing up to do if just something they see makes them feel like an outfit makes them feel unsafe. Like, what are these line dancers going to come out in the audience and like get in a fight with you? What does that mean, unsafe? How does a shirt make somebody feel unsafe?
Well, it goes to, there's a talk at one of the universities, maybe at Dartmouth. I can't remember which university it was. And it was LGBTQ plus XYZ group saying, and this woman who's admittedly a lesbian said that, reminding her that supporting Hamas is bad because of what they would do to her is in and of itself homophobic and violent. What? Words are not violence. Like, there are plenty of examples of what violence is. Words are not it. You know, the Israelis weren't slaughtered by words from Hamas.
Yep.
That's more stupidity.
I know, it's terrible.
On the subject of stupidity, we have Texas Congress people.
God, how many dumb congressmen do we have from Texas? This is either like they're really good or they're really bad. These comments came from Representative Jasmine Crockett, who is a congressman out of Texas. She said that Black Americans, or she suggested that Black Americans should be exempt from paying taxes as a form of reparations. But she admitted that the plan may not be a success as many within a community who are poor, quote, aren't really paying taxes in the first place. So this was during an interview with host Jay Carter, where she came up with this harebrained idea. She goes, and this is a quote too, so many Black folk, not only do you owe for the labor that was stolen and killed and all the other things, right, but the fact is we end up being so far behind, end quote, she said. And she said the plan may have a shaky foundation as some people within the community are not paying taxes in the first place.
This was on the Black Lawyers podcast.
It was.
If a white dude said, "Oh, it doesn't matter. They don't pay taxes anyway."
Yeah, I can't.
He'd be canceled.
Yeah.
He'd be canceled.
Talking about sending our brightest and best to DC. Holy smokes. And we got another story about this in a few minutes, but how do you just openly have this type of racist talk and no one bats an eye? How's this not headline news that someone says this?
I don't know. And I don't understand. Look, if you want to get rid of income taxes, period, trust me, I'm down. I'll lead the charge with you. But it's not about that. It's not about a rising tide lifts all boats. It's about, this is what I want for us, about something that happened 200 years ago. Look, it's an ugly part of our history, but it's 200 years in the past. You need to figure out what you can do. If you're really worried about the black community, what can you do to improve conditions of the black community? And it's not taking from other people. It's how to get people to rise above their economic situation.
Yep.
And we have plenty of examples. Charles Payne, who's a Fox Business host, grew up poor, went to the Air Force. I believe he used his GI Bill to get educated. And a very successful business owner and investor, and is now a host on Fox Business. But he grew up poor, and they asked him what really motivated him. He goes, growing up poor is a hell of a motivator. So instead of the soft racism of lowered expectations, how about raising expectations? How about raising poor people out of their situation? Hey, look. I don't think it's a white-black thing.
Yeah, everybody's not a victim either. Like, this whole victim mentality. Now, we've got to move past that.
Well, yeah, I can out-victim you.
Yes.
But look, it's not a white-black thing. It's a socioeconomic thing, because there are plenty of people in Appalachia. There are plenty of dirt-poor white people that are stuck in the cycle of being born to a family of 10, of drug use and that kind of stuff. There's plenty of that, and you have to be willing to bring yourself out of that situation. And if there's any doubt, there's a documentary called The Wonderful Whites of West Virginia, and it is scary. I mean, it's bad. I mean, it's good information, but it's hard to watch.
Yep.
And it's the reason is The Wonderful Whites is the family's name is White.
Yep.
So, yeah, this chick's an idiot.
I know.
So, Brazil is cracking down on free speech.
Yeah, so this is all going to X, which is formerly Twitter. The new, there's a judge down there, Supreme Court Justice Alexandre de Moraes. I guess I say his name right. But he has reached out to X and Elon Musk and tell them they need to block certain popular accounts in Brazil from publishing, from tweeting from Brazil. And they've actually threatened to arrest all the ex-employees down in Brazil. Hey, good for Elon. I mean, I love this guy. He stood up to him. He said, "We're not doing anything. We're not suppressing anybody's free speech in Brazil." But this has turned into a pretty big deal where, and by the way, the other social media companies have all blocked. So, they reached out to Facebook and Google and those guys and gave them blocking orders. And it sounds like all of them complied. But Elon hasn't complied, and he's pushing back and really starting to really share a lot more information about what's going on in Brazil on Twitter.
Yeah, Elon's like, no.
Yeah, we're not doing that. Yeah, good for him. Good for Elon.
And look, he doesn't need the money from Brazil. If Brazil blocks X, he'll be just fine.
Yeah, I know. But good for him because I mean, free speech. He's promised. And look, I like Twitter. I can't stand calling it X. I like to call it Twitter. Twitter's a lot better now. And what they did during the last presidential election, where the government was conspiring with the people at Twitter to either not amplify certain people's voices or either just to completely block, to me was a clear violation of First Amendment. So I'm glad Elon is finally stepping up and going with this approach. Now it's driving the left crazy. I mean, part of that is the left doesn't know what to do at this point.
Yeah, you can call Elon names on X, and now if he gets a hold of it, you probably don't want to get a back and forth with him because he's a pro at tweeting. I mean, you probably, he's going to make you look like an idiot, but he's not going to delete you, to block you, right, mute you, or anything else. You know, say what you want.
Yep.
And for that, I applaud Musk. I mean, that's he's standing by his principles. I still think his Cybertruck is ugly as homemade sin.
Ah, yeah, it's terrible.
So Kemp suspends Georgia mayor for theft.
Goodness, yeah. Mayor of Pineview in Wilcox County. I don't know exactly where Wilcox County is, but the mayor down there is called Brandon Holt. He was arrested back in January after a GBI investigation accused him of stealing nearly $65,000 from the city. This city only has 500 residents. So Governor Kemp this week just suspended him from, or last week suspended him from being mayor of that town. What's funny about this is not even the first time this guy was in trouble. So a couple of years ago, he was indicted in Bibb County, which is Macon, of fraudulently using an account number of a Macon construction company owner to move money around. So I don't know, how in the world did people in this tiny town elect this guy after he'd already been accused of stealing money? That's what's amazing.
Unfortunately, it's not shocking.
It's not shocking because it goes to show that these small towns, and you know, you've got to have double checks. You can't just let one person like this be able to steal money. There should be double and triple checks on anybody that's got access to the purse strings. Now, this guy makes 75 transactions through the mobile app, payment app, Cash App. So he's actually Cash Apping money from the Pineview's general account into his own personal bank account. So he actually, he hooked up Cash App on the city's accounts and sent himself money to his personal bank accounts.
How does this idiot think he's going to get away with that? I mean, yeah, the transactions are right there.
And look, if the city is small enough where they don't have enough people to monitor, like, the account and what's going on in the account, they don't need to be a city. They need to the city needs to be done away with.
Yeah, dissolve the city. You get 500 residents, hand it over to the county.
Yes, totally.
I mean, I don't even know what kind of police, what services do they provide? They have to provide something.
At least two services. Most little cities like this, because we've got five cities in the county I live in. Four of them are very small, but, yeah, they have to provide like water and sewage, and that's what most of them provide. And then there's something else, I forget. And that may be it. It may be water and sewage. That may be classified as two that they have to provide. But most little cities don't need to be cities. They could just be unincorporated or to be part of the county.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with being part of the county. It certainly reduces your tax burden.
Yes, right.
I mean, I don't know. This is a very good study on why we should get rid of a lot of these cities. Look, yes, if you have a city that has a police force, fire department, you know, obviously they have enough residents to support that. But some of these cities, when they say a police department, they have an officer who works 8 hours a day, isn't there on the weekends, and the sheriff's department's covering it anyway.
Yep.
So that's, but yeah. Looks like old dude's going is gonna go away on that one, because look, you can't refute it.
Yep.
He's gonna go to trial, and they're gonna pull out the records and show it to the jury and go, went from here to here, and same transaction numbers.
Mm-hmm. I know.
I mean, it's just not that hard to prove.
Nope, not at all.
This is a good time to remind you these are our opinions, not those of anyone not on the show or any respective company for which we may work, own, or otherwise associate ourselves with on a regular or irregular basis. Also, you can find other episodes and relevant stories over at GeorgiaVirtue.com. Kenny, you got the mule.
Good Lord, I hate to pick on more Texas congressmen, but this is Sheila Jackson Lee, and this happened during the eclipse last week. And again, she's been serving in Congress since 1995. So almost 30 years she's been serving in Congress, which is, I'm a huge proponent of not serving that long. I'm not going to say term limits, but 30 years in Congress is way too much. But she was actually speaking to attendees at a high school last Monday when a solar eclipse came by. And she went off on this speech where she claimed that the by climbing it, the rock solid moon is a planet that is mostly made up of gases. And then she added she wants to be the first in line to learn how to live there. Now, I don't know. Sheila Jackson Lee is 74 years old. She said the moon was made of gases and she wants to be, learn how to live on the moon. She gave, I mean, first of all, I don't know if you saw the video, but she couldn't figure out how to put her glasses on to look at the eclipse. It took her like 5 minutes to figure out how to put them on. And then she just went off on this half-brain deal of trying to describe the moon and the sun. Later, she said she confused the moon with the sun, which led everybody to say, well, what does she think? She can live on the sun now? But good Lord, this lady. I mean, she had no
choice. I wouldn't help her try.
Yeah, everybody needs to watch the video of Sheila Jackson Lee last week if you hadn't seen it already. And just watch her describe the sun and the moon and how all the gases and how everything fits together.
Was it Hank Johnson that
yeah,
was worried
Guam.
That...
Yeah, Guam.
Yeah, that we were going to capsize Guam by putting too much weight on the island?
Yep. Yeah, she said... She quoted here. She said, obviously, I misspoke and meant to say the sun... But as usual, Republicans are focused on stupid things instead of stuff that really matters. Yeah, the stupid thing being her. What can I say? Foolish thinkers lust for stupidity, she said of GOPers who criticized her gaffe. Which makes less sense, right? She said now she wants to live on the sun. It's like her excuse got even crazier. Oh, goodness.
She's an idiot.
Yeah, she is a big-time idiot. She's got the highest turnover in Congress, too, and her staff that works for her. So not only is she an idiot to say stuff like this, she obviously treats her staff really bad because of the turnover in her office. Yeah, not a good look for her last week.
And look, being a congressional staffer, if you're into politics, is a big step. And to walk away from it because she's such an insufferable bee... I have not heard good things about the way she treats her staff. I mean, mood swings and yelling and stuff
right,
like that.
Exactly.
But yeah, watching her fumble with those cardboard glasses, and she was talking to kids, and she was speaking as an authority to kids, and even the kids are looking at her like, what?
Yeah, they were looking at her like, what is this lady saying? Yes, what a mess.
Okay. Go find the class idiot and elect him.
Very true.
All right, so state prosecutor to investigate Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones.
Yeah, so this started, if you remember, when Burt Jones was a state senator during the last election. He's now lieutenant governor. He was one of the 16 GOP officials who cast electoral college votes back in December of 2020. Fannie Willis, if you remember, she was going to prosecute, or she wanted to move forward prosecute Lieutenant Governor Jones. A judge stepped in and said there was a conflict of interest there because who was it, Dave? Fannie had contributed to the person that Burt Jones ran against for Lieutenant Governor. So the judge said, obviously there's a conflict of interest here. So for the last 21 months,
well, I think she had held a fundraiser for him. It wasn't just Judge McAfee,
check.
Right?
Yep. So about 21 months ago, Pete Scandalakis, who is over the prosecuting attorney's counsel of Georgia, was tasked with trying to find somebody around the state to prosecute Burt Jones, lieutenant governor. So for the last 21 months, he's been overseeing an investigation overseeing a process to try to get someone to prosecute him. And that would be like going down to where I live in Pike County and trying to find a Superior Court judge to prosecute the lieutenant governor. Like nobody's stepping out and saying, yeah, I'll take, you know, I want some of that. So for 21 months, he couldn't find anybody. Last Thursday, he actually announced that he will lead the investigation into Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones's alleged role in trying to help former President Donald Trump overturn a 2020 election in Georgia. So this is kind of a big update to the story that now Pete Scandalakis is going to be leading the investigation.
Interesting.
It is. Yeah, very
interesting. You're appointed to be a search committee, essentially.
Yeah, that's what it was.
A recruiter to find somebody and then go, you know what? I'll just do it myself. I will hire myself.
Yeah, we couldn't find anybody. I mean, nobody wanted to. Who would take this case? And if anybody did take this case, it would have had to been maybe it's somebody out of Athens or one of the more, you know, liberal cities in Georgia. And if that would have been the case, that obviously would have looked like they were prosecuting him just to, you know, as a political vendetta. So now he's doing it.
Why not hand the stuff off to Chris Carr?
Well, Chris is not going to prosecute anything.
Well, I know. But what I don't understand is why these counties are taking it upon themselves to get involved in something that is obviously a state issue, and Chris Carr should be handling it.
Well, you know, the reason that Fannie Willis was originally in it is because she said this activity happened at the Capitol, Georgia State Capitol, which is in her county. So that's why she took this case originally. She said this is a county issue because it happened in Fulton County.
I would argue that it's not in Fulton County, that it is actually state, much like you would consider an embassy, as belongs to that nation that has the embassy, not part of that country.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the fact that the state
capital is not guarded or run by City of Atlanta. It is governed and run completely by the state. It's a Capitol Police, state troopers that take care of the Capitol, take care of the governor's mansion, and obviously the executive buildings where Chris Carr works and Gary Black. That's all state. That's all state property. So the argument that I would make is that she has no standing because it's not a county issue. It would fall upon Chris Carr's office and prosecute on a state level. And if Chris Carr wants to appoint a special prosecutor, that would be on him, not on an individual county. Because the crime is not against the people of Fulton County. The alleged crime would be against the people of the state of Georgia.
Yeah, man, I hear you. I do. Not sure I disagree either.
Now, I'm sure some legal beagle will say, well, she's technically a state employee, and she is. The prosecutors may work for the county, but the DA is a state officer. I don't know. She doesn't have standing, and I think that would be an interesting argument to see the Trump team make.
Yep.
It's the same thing I would say about the civil case Trump in New York, that $300 million or whatever it is, the civil court, the state of New York doesn't have any standing because they didn't lose anything.
Right.
That'd be like me suing, I don't know, local car dealer for something they did to somebody else and me suing personally. No, I don't have any standing. I didn't lose anything.
No, that's true.
If that person wants to sue, that's on them. It's so convoluted. And honestly, even if Trump is convicted in New York, going back to the Alvin Bragg story, it'll be tied up in the legal system for years with appeals and all that stuff before they actually throw him in the clink. I mean, he could be elected.
Hold on. If he's found guilty and he's sentenced, you don't get to just stay out until all your appeals get taken care of. I mean, he could literally be reprimanded to prison that day.
He could. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, but you're dealing with New York. I mean, I didn't think any of this stuff was going to happen, right? I didn't think people that went to D.C. on January 6th were going to get thrown in jail for years and years and years either. But that's, you know, people are political prisoners at this point, and that's what it sounds like Trump could be. I think New York totally throws Trump in jail if he's found guilty, like instantly. I mean, I hope not, but because I think there would be a total. Can you imagine people in the United States if they threw someone running for president into jail? What's going to be the reaction from most people at that point? I mean, is that really the point where people really go crazy and start mass protests across the country? Or do they just sit back and keep paying $4 for a dozen eggs and, you know, $4 for a gallon of gas? I don't know.
Bread and circus, my friend.
Yep.
Bread and circus. So why in the hell are we funding NPR?
I have no clue. This story came out last week, and it really came out of someone that had worked at NPR for a while. They did an investigation at NPR, and they found 87 registered Democrats working in editorial positions at NPR and zero Republicans. You know, if you listen to NPR over the years, and I have turned it on quite often, you can tell there's a huge liberal Democrat slant in what NPR puts on the air. And our government funds a lot of that money. So the question is, why are me and you, Dave, funding a radio station? And why is it the government's responsibility also at the end of the day? We were talking about this earlier with a hotel that's being built by a local city. But why is it the government's responsibility to fund a radio station at this point? That's the probably the biggest question out there. And, you know, if Republicans ever want to do something, this is what I don't understand about Republicans in Congress. Why do they just not defund it? Make a big deal out of this, defund it, and let's move on. This is like defunding Planned Parenthood for all those years. Like, Republicans would constantly go, we got to defund Planned Parenthood. Guess what? It never happened.
And there's a reason that, well, first of all, NPR is, even if it were 50-50, is so passe.
Yeah, they're 100% conservative. I don't want us funding it.
Yeah, as we sit here on a podcast, you know, you have liberal podcasts, you have, you know, conservative podcasts. You've got people like us that are, you know, more libertarian leaning, you know, spending conscious podcasts. You have pretty much anything that you want that is a minimal cost to put out. NPR, if people like it that much, stand on your own.
Exactly. Yeah, let them fund it. Like, if you're an NPR listener, hey, put your checkbook where your mouth is and fund them. But my money should be taken from me to fund NPR, which is something that I hardly ever listen to. And if I do listen to it, it goes against my ideology. Now, why is my tax dollars going for NPR?
I have no idea. I don't understand why it's a thing. Yeah. First of all, the content, besides being liberal, the content's crap.
Yeah, it is terrible.
The best Saturday Night Live skit for Christmas was the NPR skit with Alec Baldwin.
Yep.
Because the three of them, the two ladies and Alec, the way they were talking sounds exactly like NPR.
Yep.
It's perfect thing to put on if you want to take a nap. You know, where you have, yeah, you know, you have the Rush Limbaugh show, which you whether you like him or hate him, you couldn't take a nap to it,
right?
You know, it's, and he had to sell advertising, and it made him quite wealthy selling advertising because people liked his content. People didn't always agree with him, but even people who didn't agree with him would tune in to hear what his side was saying.
Yep.
And if their personalities can't bring listeners in and then turn around and turn that into advertising dollars, it's not viable. Get rid of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know the argument, such a small part of our budget. So? I mean, there are like five people that listen to the gardening show that comes on NPR on Saturday mornings or whatever it is.
Yep.
Nobody's listening to it. Hell, I don't even listen to terrestrial radio other than sports talk every once in a while. You know, I've got satellite in my truck because I want to listen to music.
I know.
And I've got plenty of news stations that I can tune into with the satellite. People are listening to more and more stuff on their phones. Terrestrial radio in and of itself is in trouble, I believe, because the format's is just outdated.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Kenny, as we're winding down, what do you have for closing thoughts?
Oh, I don't think I have much today. I can't wait to see. I know this is dropping on Monday, but I can't wait to see who wins the Masters this weekend. And yeah, that's going to be fun to watch.
Well, Rosie the Riveter was honored with a Congressional Gold Medal for World War II work. That's the highest civilian award you can get. And it was when I say Rosie, it's several of the ladies that were riveters that walked, their husbands or their fathers, brothers went off to war, and they took over building airplanes and ships and everything else. So many of them were awarded posthumously because, you know, they're all in their 90s now. But I thought it was a cool ceremony. The Speaker of the House was there. Several of the ladies who were riveters and went to work in factories and all that, and they were as essential to winning World War II as the troops on the ground.
Yep.
Because without those airplanes, ships, firearms, ammo, you know, we'd been just standing around in London waiting to get bombed. We had to have those materials, and our labor force was women. And even though a lot of them were expected to give up their jobs when the war ended and have the men come back in, it really opened the door to women in the workforce and realized that women could do more than sit at home, make babies and dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And what women decided is they didn't want to go back to the kitchen. They liked being being part of the workforce. They liked earning. The unfortunate thing of it is now that families can't live on a single income anymore because that part went into inflation too.
Yep.
Hell, a lot of families can't live on a double income right now.
I mean, yeah, it's tough.
So on that happy note, but yeah, awesome thing. I hate that it took took 90 years to recognize these women who, I mean, some of these women were 16, 17 years old going to work in factories, things that we would never let a 60-year-old go do now. You know, go run a welder.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can't get a 20-year-old to run a welder. So big thanks to Eric Cumby, who hopefully can edit some of my sneezes out. Sorry about that. I feel fine. It just kind of gave me a head cold. To Ken Poland, my partisan endeavor, I'm Dave Roberts. We'll talk to you next week. Catch me howling at the moon.